It's great to have James LaBrie on the Metal Command Radio Show yet again. James, it's great to have you on, and tell everybody about the new Dream Theater album that's coming out, Distance Over Time.
Yeah, it's actually happening, what, next Friday, right? Mm-hmm. So a week tomorrow is the release, February 22nd. You know, like Distance Over Time, I think it was really cool. It comes from a more organic place, I would say, you know, just the sound of it, the feel of it. I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that, you know, we got together, we lived together throughout the writing sessions and the recording. Well, when the recording started, I shouldn't say that, because, you know, I always record my vocals remotely. I always like to be up near my place and near Toronto. And, you know, I once again recorded my vocals with Rich Chickey. You know, he worked on the last three Dream Theater albums with us. You know, I think what was really cool with this is I think the fact that it came out sounding like it did and the songs are what they are, I had a lot to do with the fact that we were together, living together. The studio was only 100 meters from the house to walk to, so you're there within a minute. And, you know, like spending that time, five guys in a room from noon hour or 1 o'clock in the afternoon until 11 or 12 o'clock at night. I think that had a big, big part of why this album is what it is. And mm-hmm. I think beyond that, you know, it's all the in-between that happens. I mean, you're not in that room for 12 hours with no breaks. It's, you know, it's about walking around the outside of the studio or sitting down in a chair and having a drink together or barbecuing and then having a meal together and the conversations that stem from them. I mean, obviously you talk about the world, your family, friends, whatever is going on in your life, but ultimately the conversation comes back to what you're doing and the music and where you are at that point in the writing and what you're feeling, and maybe, you know, you have an idea, or, like, you know, what do you guys think about going here with that, or you remember that last section, why can't we bring that back? And so it's just a constant, like, cultivating of, you know, ideas or being able to move forward but with no distractions. And not that that doesn't work as well, because, you know, we've recorded many, many albums where we're together during the day working, or, you know, some of us are in a hotel room because we're too far away from home. And then we get back together the next day. This was different in the fact that you live together, you know? So you're under the same roof when you're writing, and you're under the same roof when you're just hanging out and living. And, I think that kind of focus. And like I said, you know, there's nothing that was to, throw us off or distract us, had everything to do with this. In fact, the experience was so great that we felt, you know, we've even said to one another, oh, you know, we should do this again, because look what we got from it. You know, within, I think it was 17 or 19 days, we wrote the album. Mm-hmm. You know, and I mean, that's how they used to do it back in the day, too. I mean, Zeppelin recorded like that, the Stones recorded like that, mm-hmm. Deep Purple, Pink Floyd, boom, boom, boom. You know, like they all went away, you know, Rush and all that. They went away, you know, and they got away from everything. And it was just all about the music and writing it and attaining that goal, you know, along the way. So I think that's why this album seems, you know, it's very cohesive. It's the songs are more concise. You know, it's get in and get out. And yes, we did make a conscious effort. You know, it was like, you know, it's easy for us. Trust me, it's very easy for this band to go in and write a song that's 15 minutes or 20 minutes, because that just, it's just a part of who we are, and it always has been a part of who we are as a band. But it's another thing when you say, you know, let's just go in, bang them over the head with something that sounds great, still resembles us in every way, but it's a little bit more, you know, it's a little more concise. It doesn't necessarily have to be a 10-minute or 15-minute epic or whatever it might be. Let's just, you know, write songs that we feel connected to, that we feel that we can get in there, make a very powerful statement, get out, and then move on to another idea. Mm-hmm. And I think this worked really well for us, you know, especially coming off of an album like The Astonishing, where it was this theatrical opus like rock opera. I think it just kind of was a natural progression and a natural transition to want to go in and write this kind of an album.
Now, I'm going to touch on a few things you just talked about. The first thing is I'm going to talk about the fact that you just mentioned how you guys wrote this album pretty quickly. And it's interesting you say that, because where with The Astonishing, when you guys went in, you consciously did this huge opus, this huge rock opera. You had all these different interludes, and you guys went in and spent a ton of time writing that story and writing songs to fit that story. And really putting it, because putting together a concept album is really not something that is easy to do. And it's also not something that is, per se, a very quick process either. This record just seems like a bunch of guys got into a room, jammed out some tunes, and that was it. And it's great because it's almost like you didn't overthink anything.
I mean, you're right. You're absolutely right. And that, you know, when you think about it, rock and roll, the true essence of rock and roll is that immediate gratification, is that immediate reflection on something, and mm-hmm. not trying to be scientific about it. And I'm not saying, I'm not insinuating that that's who we are and that's who we've been. Yes, we can become a very analytical team of people, but at the same time, it's only because it's serving a purpose for that particular moment or for that particular song. But I think this was more like, you know, hey, you know, let's let our hair down. Let's do, you know, we're still going to be Dream Theater. We're still going to, you know, have that technical prowess. But at the same time, let's do something. We knew we wanted to write a heavy album. We knew we wanted it to be a more aggressive approach, sonically and musically. So that really availed itself right then and there. You know, oh yeah, you know, we can still be, you know, progressive, but, you know, let's also be heavy, and let's really maintain that balance between those two predominant elements, you know, and then we can still attain our goal and create something that's, you know, like a classic rock, hard rock album, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that's definitely what we achieved. I mean, you know, yeah, the Astonishing was, you know, that's an exception to the rule, because that was 3 years in the making. And so, yeah, you know, this was fun. This was allowing us to be together, and it just was, you know, for all intents and purposes, a very prolific experience.
Well, you know, and it's funny, because when guys in bands that they go on tour, they're around each other constantly. The fact you guys don't get sick of each other not only tells me that you guys have a chemistry personally together, that you get along great, but the fact that you were able to just get together, sit in a room, write this record, which I think is absolutely amazing, write this album, and that's it, and you put out probably one of the best Dream Theater albums I've ever heard, you know, that really tells me that you guys really have chemistry, not only on a personal level, but obviously on a musical level as well.
Well, you're right. You know, that's a big part of it. I think, you know, the way that I like to look at it is, you know, Tony, you have to remember that we've been together for 30 years, and we've gone through our growing pains. We've gone through that where we're very respectful and understanding of each person's idiosyncrasies or OCD qualities, or, you know, you have to, at the end of the day, as long as you can accept the fact that there's five people in a band, or however many people are in a band, that you got to be able to accept each other's, you know, for lack of a better term, uniqueness, you know. And, you know, even though you might find, oh, that's not something I would do, or that's not the way that I process things, or that's not the way that I like to go through a day, you have to respect the fact that that is how mm-hmm. that person does it. And I think once that becomes an accepted reality, then you're able to really, you know, accept and move forward in a very positive manner. I mean, we, you know, like when we're on the road, you know, we might be together every day, but we all do our own thing. And that's the thing. Like we all get into our own routines and our own things that, that bring us to the point where we walk on stage and we feel that we're absolutely connected and we're in the right zone, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the same time, though, we might be going down the road on the tour bus, but we kind of do our own thing. You know, we do sit around and talk and shoot shit and have good laughs and that. But at the same time, we all know how to give one another space, and it's just natural. It's not like we feel we owe each other anything beyond what we want to give. And when, you know, we all have our own hotel rooms and we all kind of do our things on our own day, on our days off, you know, if we want to get together with one another, we text each other. Hey, man, what are you doing? You want to go for a coffee? Hey, you want to go for a drink? Man, what are you doing for dinner tonight? Or it might be just, and it's as simple as, yeah, man, no problem. Let's get together. Or, you know what? I'm chilling. I'm just going to chill. And I think that's what maintains the healthiness. That's why we're still in a band together and we still love one another and we're like brothers to one another because of that respect and that absolute understanding of one another. Right. And I think that's what makes it hard for most bands, is because it isn't easy to achieve that. Like, for me to say that, it sounds like, oh yeah, so anybody should be able to do this. And it's like, no way, man. And like I prefaced this, you know, we've already gone through our growing pains. We went through some bullshit times, mm-hmm. you know? We went through the times where it was like, hang on a second, you know, I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around who and what you are. You know, and well, the only way to get past that is to be mature and to talk it out, right? So that there is that understanding. It doesn't mean you have to agree on anything, but there is that understanding for sure.
Now, you know, it's interesting. Let's talk about the Astonishing for a minute. Now, I am somebody that is a fan of concept records. So, you know, concept albums, you know, they resonate with a certain group of people. Some people, they don't. And there were obviously very mixed reviews of that album. Now, me personally, you know, there were people that hated it, people that loved it. Me personally, I liked it. Once I ended up getting the story and getting into it, and, you know, concept albums are something that you really have to be into to really like them a lot. And, you know, you've taken part with Arion, for example. That's a good example of a concept records that you've been a part of. So, you know, this album, to me, a lot like Octavarium, I think, is one of those records that people eventually are going to like down the road a little bit more than they did when it initially came out. And, you know, I think it was an underrated album. But, you know, looking back on it now, how do you think that The Astonishing was received? What are your thoughts on, you know, a lot of the mixed reviews that this album did have, you know, after it came out? And will you do another concept album, say, down the road? You know?
I think, you know, there's always the possibility we'll do another concept album. I mean, I'll first and foremost answer that, because that just seems to be a natural, you know, vehicle for us, you know, as the kind of band that we are, you know. I mean, if we were, you know, I don't know, for lack of a better term, you know, a band like Skid Row, would we be thinking about a concept album? I doubt it, right? Mm-hmm. I don't even know why I said Skid Row. I haven't thought of Skid Row in freaking ages, man. That's so wild. But anyways, you know, like, the thing is that with us, and looking back on The Astonishing, I remember before it came out, I mean, obviously everybody in the band was like, you know, like this, you know, we reached what we were going after, and we felt absolutely great with the way that that album turned out. But at the same time, we were also, I remember some of the conversations, I was like, you know what, you know, I could totally see our fans, this is going to polarize our fans. There's going to be people that are enamored with it, and there's going to be people that just cannot wrap their heads around it. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's putting it nicely. And so, you know, I mean, it, when you do something that daring, and when you do something that bold and that experimental, it's bound to bring along some criticism, mm-hmm. with it. You know,
right.
Some not so nice. But you know, I mean, me personally, when I look back at that, I mean, I'm absolutely thrilled with it, the way that it turned out. I mean, I absolutely loved singing that album, because it allowed me to be everything as far as a vocalist. You know, it allowed me to use and every facet of my voice. So to me, it was absolutely gratifying and fulfilling. And I think, you know, for the most part, the other guys felt really, really connected to it. I mean, that's what it was. It was a rock opera opus, right? Yeah. So, you know, any album like that, any artist that would want to release an album that is 2 hours plus, hey man, that's you got to have a lot of balls to think that people today that we're living in a reality of sound bites, you know, yeah. And then you release something like that. But I mean, if any band was going to do it, I would think that and hope to get a great response, it would be somebody like Dream Theater, because our fans have come to know that we are elongated in our forms of communication or expression. Mm-hmm. So you know, but it didn't surprise me when I started seeing some of the reactions and some of the reviews. I mean, I was like, yeah, well, whatever, you know. I get it. You know, it's not everyone's cup of tea, for sure.
Right, and I reference Octavarium again because that album had mixed reviews, and now people really like it and they get the record. And I think, in my opinion, I think anyway, that this Astonishing album eventually will reach that same category.
Right, you know, I feel, you know, I don't know, Tony. I feel nowadays, you know, because everything is, I think it's expected to be talked about immediately, and I don't think people give themselves, and I'm not putting down the methods of communication or how we tend to want to respond to something immediately, but the fact is that's exactly what goes down, is that somebody might hear, you know, a song from us that's a sneak preview, and they'll hear it once and they're automatically on board talking about anything and everything that it said to them. And to me, how do you listen to a song once and fully, and I don't care who you're listening to, and fully grasp the intention, you know? Mm-hmm. To me, I don't think so. And so I think from what you're saying makes absolute sense, because if something is sitting with you and residing with you in a longer period of time, you also have that time to get closer to it and to appreciate all its nuances and inflections and subtleties, and then you're really able to dive into it. And I think that is why something would initially maybe you didn't really, gather into yourself wholeheartedly, is something that later on you're going, wait a minute, wow. Now I get it. Now I see it, you know. And I'm not saying that it has to be something that's a laborious experience. It should never be that, you know. There has to be something that you gratify or you gravitate towards immediately in order for you to want to maintain that relationship, right?
Right.
You know, so yeah.
Well, James,
it's a different world we live in, man. It really is.
Now, I do want to mention something else, and the first thing I'm going to mention is your last solo album, in my opinion, was like one of my favorite albums I've ever heard. I still listen to that, and I know that Dream Theater is the full-time thing going on, but do you think when you guys have some time off that you'll get back in the studio and record another one of these solo albums? Because to me, this past solo record was absolutely phenomenal, and it's still one of my favorite albums that I've ever heard.
Well, you know what, Matt and I and the rest of the guys in the band, you know, we all were so thrilled with the way that came out, and you know, and I thank you for everything you just said there. That means the world to me. It means the world to every one of us, you know. And I think that, you know, as far as wanting to do another one, absolutely, you know, Matt and I, we touch base once in a while. His life's very busy now, you know, and he knows that what I got going on here, the Dream Theater world. So it's, we realize that the window of opportunity isn't necessarily where we want it to be. Mm-hmm. But I know that we both have admitted that inevitably it has to happen again. And I know that, you know, Peter and Marco and Ray, that those guys are on board the day that we say, okay, guys, here we go, man. We're going to do another one. Here's the songs. Let's go for it, you know. I think we ended on such a high note, but I think that there's so much more that we can achieve. And, you know, even Matt and I, when we were talking last, it's like, you know, we already have a lot of ideas. It's just a matter of when can we actually, you know, peel ourselves away from all our other obligations,
right,
you know, and commitments. So, but it'll definitely happen again. You know, I think, you know, and the thing that's always eluded us too is, you know, that crisscross of time between Dream Theater and then the solo thing. I really would love to take the solo act out one last time before I get to an age where I'm like, I don't give a shit if I go out again. You know, I don't want to see that happen, because I think this needs to be seen live at least one more time, you know, throughout North America, throughout Europe, and wherever else we decide that we feel that it's necessary to go. But I definitely want to get this band on stage, because I think it would be huge.
Now, you said something pretty interesting. You said something about being in the soundbite age, and I agree with that. People don't have the attention span they used to, because everybody wants everything so fast. And, you know, for Dream Theater, which is a band that has so many elements to it, and you guys write long songs, you know, do you find that difficult to find new fans? And, you know, maybe talk about, you know, if that's even affected you at all.
I think that if you're a fan, it's already a given, you know, and that's to be expected. So if you're a fan, I think you're in it with us for life, I would hope. That's the reality. That's the way I'm going to paint it. I'll feel better about it just saying it. but beyond that, I think, yeah, you know, like if someone is told, hey, man, have you heard of this band, Dream Theater, man, here's some stuff, check them out. I think at first it might be a little bit like, what the hell, you know, what the hell is this? You know, what are these guys doing here? And what's going on? But I think that, you know, it's going to be within a very short period of time, it's going to be their cup of tea or not. And I think, you know, you have to be somewhat of a music listener that is already into bands like us, you know. I think that you'll gravitate to bands that seem to be a little bit more musically driven and not just maybe a fad. So I think the people that will fall in to becoming a Dream Theater fan are people that are musically inclined to want to have something that states a bit more than normal.
Right.
So I think it's just a natural kind of discovery, because if they're going to be listening, you know, and it can be anyone, right? I mean, whether it's, you know, anybody from Deftones to One Republic, and then all of a sudden you're listening to In Flames, and then you come across a band like Pain of Salvation, and then all of a sudden it directs you to, you know, a band like Dream Theater. Well, then you're kind of listening to such a large array of diversity already that I would think that you could sit down and say, wow, okay, now I appreciate where this band, Dream Theater, is coming from as well.
Now, when you change members of a band, you know, obviously there's always the question of, is the musical chemistry going to be affected? Is the band going to suffer as far as how they sound? And, you know, I'll be honest, I was a little skeptical myself when Mike Mangini came into the fold. I know he's a great drummer, but would he fit in with you guys? And I really think now that he's been here, as the albums have progressed, I've liked him better and better in the band. And talk about his contributions and bringing him in to this band.
No, absolutely. Well, yeah, first, I mean, you know, it goes without say. I mean, he's a phenomenal player. He's technically a master at what he does. But I think, you know, with this distance over time, this is really where Mike was able to be 100% fully engaged. He stepped up to the plate. He's a big, big part of this from the writing standpoint, like from, you know, from day one till day done when we were done writing, he was fully 100% involved with the ideas, with the arrangements, so on and so forth. So this is a tour de force for him. Not that the other albums aren't. I mean, he's played incredible, and the chemistry has been there, well, since before Dream Theater, because he played on a few of my solo albums. The last one he did was Elements of Persuasion, which he played on, but he played on my first two Mall Muzzler albums as well. So he's, you know, I knew when the auditions were coming up, I kept saying to the guys, this is our guy. This is our guy. I'm telling you, this is going to be our guy. The other guy that, you know, can you guess who else I really wanted in? I mean, before it was a no-brainer that Mike was our man, was Peter Wildur, and he plays in my solo, you know, my solo band. But, I mean, that was the other guy that I was, like, also completely floored with, right, in the auditions. But Mike, you know, like, he, yeah, you know, he, this is his fourth undertaking with us, and this is the fourth album, right? Yeah. So, you know, when I think about all the tours that he's already done, all the shows he's already done, I think that, you know, Mike has really kind of come into a place where he feels 100% full on, fully involved, and fully part of the team. And I think the album bleeds that all over the place. You know, you can hear his drumming, you can hear the flow, and definitely there's that added influence, you know.
Now, I would say the album's a little more straightforward than your typical Dream Theater album. And was this something that was planned, or did you folks just simply say, hey, you know what, whatever comes out comes out?
Well, you know, primarily John Petrucci and myself, we sat down and we wrote the melodies for these songs, and Jordan got involved as well. I think, you know, the melodies where they are is what I felt at the end of the day best suited these songs, you know. And to me, you know, I mean, hey, listen, I mean, if that's the way that it hits you, I'm not going to try and change your opinion on it. But to me, they speak volumes of expression, and they, you know, it might be, I can see how you might interpret it as being more straightforward, but just due to the nature of the album being more a heavier, a more aggressive album, I thought that that's where the melody should also be, pretty much neck and neck, or hand in hand, or stride and stride. That they don't necessarily have to be fancy free. They need to be very strong and very rigid, so to speak, in order to really support the direction of the music. Mm-hmm. and the pieces and the arrangements. So I'm absolutely thrilled with these melodies, to be honest with you. You know, and I think that it still allowed me, you know, in many pieces, it still allowed me to be very expressive. You know, in Etzwitzen, Barstool Warrior, Pale Blue Dot, Out of Reach, you know, I was still able to still have that, I don't know, I'm going to say evocative side to me, you know, still rear its head. So, yeah.
So for my last question, James, any last words to say to the fans who are going to be listening to this interview?
Hey, you know, take distance over time, put it in your vehicle, hook up your phone Bluetooth. See, I know how you go about it. And then drive down the road and crank this thing. Because to me, that's my favorite experience with listening to a new album. I love to just get in my car, man, and drive down the road and crank it, and nothing else and no one else around me. And I feel that that is really the greatest experience and the most intimate experience with any given music, any new music. So do that, and I think you'll thank me, and you'll have a great ride as well. Just make sure the tank's full.